It is Sunday, July 10th, 2011. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here, and you are here for another edition of Curmudgeon's Corner. Yay!
Yay! Woo!
We have an exciting show for you today. Well, sort of. Four main topics. The debt ceiling. The whole thing with the news of the world over in the UK. Is it Casey Anthony? The Casey Anthony trial.
Casey Anthony.
And Hugo Chavez had some issues this last week or two. And that's our agenda. So shall we kick it off with the debt ceiling, Yvonne?
Sure.
So what happened this week? I've seen things back and forth about the talks falling apart, or on the other hand, someone saying, well, this is the Republicans blinked because now they're talking about doing a smaller deal. What the hell's going on?
Well, there's a lot of posturing here. I mean, obviously, I think that, you know, look, there was a chart that I saw today. Okay. It was like, where the
charts
heck is
good.
It?
I like
I'll look it up. There was a chart that showed, you know, the progress that we've had, say, how over the last, like, 20 years, our government expenditures and revenues have moved, okay? All right, so one thing that you'll note, that if you look at the chart, this is a chart that I don't know if I can give people access to. It's on The Economist, okay? So, they had a chart
it.
Where they mapped. Well, just describe. It had percentage of GDP, the U.S. federal government spending and receipts as a percentage of the gross domestic product. Okay, a simple chart, and it shows you how, say, since '93. Okay, you know, after the deal in which, you know, Mr. Bush Senior broke the "Read My Lips, No New Taxes" thing, right? Okay, mm-hmm. happened. Okay, spending as a percentage of GDP kept going down. Okay. All right, up until about 2000, okay? And receipts as a percentage of GDP kept going up. So sometime just around the year 98, 99, because of that, guess what? We had a surplus, okay? There was more receipts than spending, okay? Then there's this huge inflection point, like right around 2000, okay? Where spending starts going back up and receipts start going down. And when we're talking about down, we're not just talking about a little bit down, which is the problem where all the fucking, you know, people that keep talking about how we're getting taxed to death keep failing, okay? Receipts as a percentage of spending in the year 2000, a GDP, were 20%, okay? Right now, receipts as a percentage of GDP are only 15%, okay? 1/5. I mean, it is a historic low, okay, all right, by any measure, okay, and spending, which had been creeping up during the entire Bush administration, okay, as a percentage of GDP, it never went down as a percentage of GDP, had a huge surge, obviously, the last couple of years because of TARP, because of the stimulus plan. It went up and shot up from 20% of GDP to 25% of GDP, and then it actually started trending back down. Like, it went and surged in 09. Which, by the way, that was, like, decided by the Republicans, okay? A Republican president, okay, with a Democratic Congress.
Yeah,
and
the
then
Republican
in
Congress didn't really like it, but, yeah, go ahead.
Correct. Okay, and then it went back down. It started inching back down in 2010. However, I mean, this spread, I mean, the receipts as a percentage of GDP are at a ridiculously historic low. I mean, they are – it's just, you know, it's just – I mean, it's just the only time – no, they haven't been this low, period, ever, throughout the time period, okay? I mean, and I'm like, okay, you know, so, okay. So everybody in the Republicans is stuck with this whole thing that – No, you can't, no, raise revenue, no. Okay, and I'm like, I'm looking at this chart, and I'm just like, guys, we need to do something on that end of the equation, because there is just, with the gap is so wide between spending and receipts. That, yes, you can, you know, a lot of the proposals that are out on the table right now basically have, in order to trim the deficit, 75 to 85% is tilted towards spending cuts, and between 15 to 25% is tilted toward revenue increases, okay? I mean, but you can't get there with fucking zero revenue increases. I mean, the position is just so freaking inflexible, okay? Now, look, Bob, what's his name? Boner himself, Bonner, however the fuck his name is. I don't know. I'm not being facetious. I'm not sure. Is it Boner or Bonner?
I think it's Bonner.
You think so?
Yes.
Okay, well, anyway. All right, well, okay, whatever his name is. He himself, in one of the compromise proposals, said that they would be acceptable to 85-15 on this, okay? And they are very close. However, you know, the Tea Party group is so adamant at not giving up one inch, okay, on this, that I don't understand. I mean, I think that they're going to try to push through a compromise, but certainly the posturing is having to be right now that they're not showing compromise because they've got a big group of people that is just not willing to accept any compromise at all. So, I mean, you know.
Well, I mean, what is there to say? I mean, there's a group of folks who's in the end, what they would like to see is a much, much, much smaller government who does much, much, much less. That's all on the spending side, and the whole idea that they were trying to do for, you know, decades, it seems, but never worked because people just borrowed, was that whole starve the beast idea, where
that's a whole bunch of crap.
If you limit tax revenues, then of course people will spend less. Well, the reality
is bullshit.
Nobody spent less because they had the ability to borrow. So now they're taking the line, well, stop giving them the ability to borrow. And then starve the beast has to actually work.
I will say this. I am not. I actually agree with the fact that we have to cut the spending. Okay. All right. I agree. I totally, wholeheartedly agree. Okay. But as has been shown, everybody, like, in theory, likes all the government spending, okay? But when they start talking about their own programs, it's amazing how everybody just goes and says, oh, no, you can't touch that, okay? I mean, everybody keeps asking everybody, are you in favor of cutting spending? Yes, 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 yes. And then you tell them, well, we're going to cut Social Security benefits. Oh, no, you can't do that. And I'm like, okay, well, we may have to cut Medicare. No, you can't touch that. Okay, all right. We're going to have to cut military spending. No, you can't touch that. Oh. Okay, well, fuck. You just took off the table. I just said three, and I just took off what? 80, 85%? No, we have to cut the pork barrel. Yes, the earmarks. That's what's killing us, the earmarks. And I'm like, okay, people, the earmarks are like 1%, 2%. Okay, great. So, all right, let me zero them all out. Okay, done. Now what? We're not anywhere close. Now tell me how we get there, okay? It's just, I mean, it all sounds great in sound bites, but then you get to you know, real practically how to do this, and then nobody likes the decisions. I mean, it's just what it seems like. I mean, it's just stupid.
Yeah. So let me ask another question. And the last couple minutes I've been trying to find a reference, but failing.
Failing. Okay.
Yeah. There've been a number of folks on sort of the liberal side of the equation. Let me say the mainstream consensus is that we do indeed have to do something about the budget deficit, and we have to do something about it now. And the Republicans are forcing the issue through their actions with the debt ceiling. But even, you know, the moderate Democrats and such agree, hey, this is an issue that's important. We need to figure out something. However, if you go to the further left side of the spectrum, there are people who are making the argument, and Matthew Iglesias is one of them. I've read several things, and I was looking for one of his summaries on this, but basically making the argument that, look, now is not the time to deal with this issue. We're in a high unemployment situation. We're in a low interest rate situation. We're in, he makes a couple other things, but basically saying, look, you know, this is, you know, there may be times where the deficit is important. Now is not one of them. And we should just kick it down the road.
I agree on that in terms of timing. However, there is one thing that I think a couple of people that, moderate people have mentioned this week that does make sense in one way. I think that there's a lot of uncertainty because everybody who has really truly a brain understands that the current deficit trend that we have is unsustainable and that there's got to be a way for us to be able to see how we bridge this budget gap.
Although okay? I want to point out once again, because I've been really shocked by this chart every time I've seen it, that if Congress went away and did absolutely nothing, the deficit would resolve itself over the next few years because certain bills would expire.
There are
various things in place that are going would reduce benefits of various sorts, would reduce tax cuts of various sorts. There are a variety of things that simply have sunset provisions that if you let them all sunset would take care of this problem. The difficulty is nobody expects Congress to sit on their hands and do nothing.
I'll tell you one. There's been one, for example, where there was supposed to be a reduction in Medicare payments that had been agreed a bazillion years ago, okay? But everybody keeps postponing, for example. And if you let that one sunset, that would cut Medicare spending by a substantial amount. Right. For example, there is the tax cuts that would expire. Let's face it, there would be a whole bunch of spending authorizations that, you know, that are right now supplementary, okay, that would just expire for certain things, for example, like the war.
Right.
There are a lot of things. Yes, it's true. But the thing is that because nobody expects them to all go away, and nobody expects them to just wait for those to go away, I think the one thing that the business community in general, okay, and a lot is in business community more than not individual taxpayers, okay. But the business community in general, I think, is a little bit uncertain about what the future is going to have in terms of certain impacts on taxes because they know at some point something's got to happen. But I think people don't like to be in a – it's not that people think that there's going to be a massive change, but they now want to know what it is and what the impact they're going to have into their future. And so I think people are being cautious, okay, for certain things because they don't know what that's going to be. Not because they think it's going to be catastrophic. It's just simply because you don't know what it is. So I think that removing that uncertainty to business to a certain extent, okay, does help the economy move forward, okay? Because I think people, just because of the uncertainty, are just trying to hold off to find out what's going to happen, okay? Because there could be certain things they do that could be beneficial, that why go and commit to something right now when in 2 months these guys are going to decide something that may change that equation, okay? And I'll give you an example, okay? Right now, for example, around the world, a lot of companies hold profits in offshore subsidiaries because the way that the tax rates work between the countries, it's a lot more expensive to repatriate those profits back to the U.S., okay? But say, for example, they decide to lower corporate tax rates, okay, in the U.S., okay? I mean, GE, for example, last year paid zero taxes because they almost they made all their profits almost all off the U.S. and basically repatriated none, okay? So if they say, well, we're going to cut that rate down to 25%, 26%, if they do that, then that would obviously, for you as a corporation, make a difference in the decision of what you're going to do in terms of investments, okay? Where you want to base stuff, where you want to do stuff. So, you know, I think that because people are discussing this right now and messing with it, and because they think that even if we kick the can down, it's going to have to come and be rediscussed in 6 months, they're looking forward to, okay, you know what? Figure out what the fuck you're going to do. Let me know, and then so I can make my decision of what the hell I'm going to do. Okay? I think that's the thing. So, you know, and I actually think, here's the thing. Everybody always kicks everything down. I actually don't think it's such a bad thing that people are forcing the issue right now, because if you let them, they've been kicking the can down on this for how many years now? I mean, it's just been every fucking year. Everything just keeps getting kicked down. I'm actually, you know, to a certain extent, even though I may not agree with what the extreme guys actually want to do with it, I actually agree with the fact of forcing the fucking issue right now. And let's just do something.
Okay. Well, I'm bored now. Let's take a break and we'll come back with something else. We'll talk about the news of the world. We'll be right back after this.
You're in the Valley, AM 1620 and LiganairRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. Come on, baby.
Let's do the twist. Well, they got a new dance and it goes like this.
I hit the radio dial and tuned it up all the way.
I got a dancing in the moonlight.
Classic music for a classic American town. AM 1620. And in stereo at LiganairRadio.com, The Valley.
And here we are. So, I don't know how many U.S. folks are following this. I listen to the BBC a lot, so I've been hearing quite a lot about this issue. There's a newspaper, for those of you who don't know, in the U.K.
The News of the World.
The News of the World. It's a weekly Sunday paper owned by News Corp. Which, of course, also owns Fox News and a bunch of other stuff. They own the Wall Street Journal now. Like I said, a bunch of other stuff.
Fox Network.
Yeah.
Fox Network. DirecTV. No, they don't own DirecTV anymore. They used to own DirecTV for a little bit, but not anymore.
Anyway, this is all Rupert Murdoch's thing.
Media.
Apparently,
Empire,
they had they didn't own Sky. The Sky Network, BSkyB, outright in the UK. Well, they're in the process of...
Well, they didn't own... Well, they have same thing happened over here. They never owned, like, DirecTV outright entirely. They owned, like, 60% of it or something. Their holdings have been like that for both DirecTV and Sky. Okay? So... Right.
Anyway, so they own this newspaper, and apparently... what's come out over the last couple weeks that has ballooned into a big scandal in the UK that's encompassing government people, not just press people, is that the newspaper, well, in one specific case, and apparently it's happened in others as well, they've gotten into the habit of hacking cell phones. And hacking is not necessarily hacking. It's guessing people's voicemails passwords.
Well, because a lot of people leave the default passwords.
Yes.
Right.
So lots of people had 1111 or 1234
or their phone number or whatever.
Other similarly easily guessable things. And so the one particular case that blew up is that there was a young girl who was abducted and murdered. A number of years back. And apparently they hacked this girl's cell phone and to sort of, you know, get the you know, all the people calling in and saying, are you okay? Where are you? What, you know, this kind of stuff. But the voicemail filled up. So they started deleting voicemail so that they could get more of these voicemails. And of course, you know, her parents and the police noticed that voicemails were disappearing. And we're like, oh my God, that means she's alive somewhere. She's checking her voicemail. In fact, she was not alive somewhere.
No.
You know, and so people have gotten really upset about this, you know, because it was sort of a scummy practice, and in this particular case, you know, it caused all kinds of additional heartache for the parents of this girl and everything else, because it gave them false hope for a while that she was really out there and checking her voicemail and, you know, that kind of stuff. But apparently they've done it in a lot of other cases. I think I saw something with Hugh Grant, the actor.
Yes.
A number of other celebrities, potentially. And basically, this is just one of their...
And politicians.
And politicians, their way of getting scoops on certain things, listening to people's voicemail. Anyway, the scandal started, you know, expanding from the, you know, the reporters who actually did this to the editors of the paper to, oh, guess what? Some of those editors are now in government. To the notion of just, hey, the government and the media have been, you know, very much in bed with each other on all kinds of things, and there's all kinds of cozy relationships going back and forth. There was a there were reports of bribing the police to get information about cases, you know, all kinds of stuff. And in response, in the end, News Corp announced it was shutting down this paper, which is 168 years old or something like that. So it's been around a while. Today, actually, as we record this, Sunday, July 10th, is the last issue of this paper. Although there are a number of reports that it'll launch under a new name in a couple weeks. In a slightly different form, but... I don't know. Thoughts, Yvonne? I mean...
Well, look, I mean, we'll start off with the fact that the whole practice was very scummy. I mean, because it definitely was. I mean, I think that, you know, look, we've had this discussion about what constitutes news, okay? You know, we're talking about, for example, the WikiLeaks. We're talking about, whether, you know, you go and you log into, you know, you find, you know, you get evidence of criminal wrongdoing from somebody and you have to pursue certain, maybe not, you know, not kosher means in order to get that information and expose criminal activity versus, you know, just people logging in for just shits and giggles. Okay. You know, and getting some information that may prove to be embarrassing, but yet, you know, not really, you know, revealing news. Okay, and I think that for the most part, what these guys were doing was in the line of not really going in and trying to expose crimes, frauds, anything of the sort, but was just basically just going in and just invading people's privacy in order to be able to make their news more sensational. And I think it crosses a line that I don't know. It seems like overall, the people that are covering the news, whether it's bloggers, whether it's anybody or whatever right now, apparently a lot of people don't have a freaking problem with doing that anymore. You know, the fact that News Corp went and Rupert Murdoch went and was the scandal basically because it was an old eye publication and it spread to so many people and it reached like so many people in so many different levels, people that are even in government, that I think they took the action of shutting down the paper symbolically in order to show how serious they were about taking this, even though I think a lot of the British, the general British population doesn't believe that, you know, they're very cynical about this whole move about shutting down the paper. Okay. And what the reasoning behind it. I think a lot of people had to do with the fact that Rupert Murdoch had spent a whole freaking year trying to get approval to buy B-Sky B, and he just figured that maybe he needed to do something dramatic in order to get that going. Given that the News of the World was such a small piece of the empire, he was just like, the hell with it. Fucking sacrifice the bitch. Who cares? We'll make up the money somewhere else. But it just goes to that line. I mean, I don't know. It's like, what constitutes news anymore?
Well,
and like what deserves to be covered or not?
You know, I forget who the quote was from, but somebody dug up the quote in the last few days when talking about this, that, you know, outside of a few, outside of a few unique publications, there is no news business. There's just the advertising business. And that's a lot of what's, you know, driving, you know, these kinds of publications. I mean, you know, we can talk all we want about sort of the highfalutin, you know, what's really important, what does the public need to know, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, the reality of it is those things are not what sell papers. Those things are not what get viewers, you know. And so, you know, the only folks who are going to be, you know, putting out that kind of stuff are either, you know, specialty publications where people who are really, really interested pay a lot of money, or, you know, nonprofits, you know, who are, you know, doing things out of the public interest and make money off donations. And even in both of those cases, you know, whoever is paying the bills will still have a big influence over what happens. So, you know,
that's correct.
There's no such thing as, you know, a pure media at all, ever, anywhere.
Well, I don't think there ever was, to be honest with you. I think that
there are a lot of people who've pointed out that, you know, here in the U.S., we sort of idealize the, you know, era of, you know, the gray lady New York Times and Washington Post in the, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s, I guess, and, you know, the Edward R. Murrow and Walter Cronkite and these kinds of straight news guys. And, you know, people have pointed out that era where, for whatever reason, the sort of objectivity was idolized was a historical outlier, you know.
That's true.
For most of the history of, of news media, news media has been pushing views. I mean, you would have newspapers that, you know, were associated with various political parties. You'd have newspapers that were associated with the railroad interests. You'd have whatever, but they were pushing an agenda, not just, you know, let's be objective, you know, and
that's right.
And I'm all for, just to be clear, like, I do have actually mixed feelings about the specific things that triggered this. Yes, it's kind of scummy what they did, but at the same time, I don't want to put all kinds of restraints on, you know, what newspapers and news media can do. You know, let them suffer the consequences if they do stuff like this. But then on the other hand, and just to say it too, I mean, if all you have to do is type 1111 in and get somebody's voicemail, I mean, I don't know. It goes to the conversation we had the other day about, you know, people leaving their doors unlocked doesn't mean inviting random people into your house to take your stuff. But still,
correct.
You know, people, you know, set your passwords. You know, but anyway.
Well, yeah, and I mean, you know, that's true, but I think the reality is that for them, even if the password was not a very secure password, the reality is that what they did, I believe that in the UK, it's illegal anyway. Okay, right. You know,
I believe it's illegal here too. I mean, if you remember,
and it's illegal in the US too.
I mean, if you remember that kid who got Sarah Palin's email password by properly identifying her high school in the "I forgot my password" screen. It went to jail for a year or whatever.
Right. It's still illegal. Okay. It doesn't mean, you know, that this is criminal activity that, you know, society doesn't accept, that people don't believe is the right way to be able to get information. And the reality is that people should be punished for doing this kind of shit, because it's just, you know, not right. Period. That's it.
Okay. I don't know. Do we have anything else to say about this, or should we move on?
No, we should move on.
Okay. It's time for your poem of the week. Enjoy your poem. We'll be right back after this with another one of these sensationalist kind of stories, the Casey Anthony trial thing, case, whatever it is. We'll be right back.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by No-Tell Motel.
If she sweats during the night, the possibility of salt is a stronger option than heat. By Soham Patel. We cover our heads so hair won't fall on food or fire. One other idea is to keep the knives as sharp as possible. The skins of the fruit need not be blanched off that way. Heat changes texture and taste, but those elements are something undesired for the dish in mind. The season makes it so. This room has enough stainless steel to reflect and blind when the sun is shining. A room in a basement is not a damp thing. If there are instruments for certain methods and tools for others, the difference will be cataloged. Dust will gather on the shelf. Most recipes have been memorized and designed for variations anyway. Eggs spin to crack. Butter smear with hands. Butter smear spread over pans. Skin will burn and backs will hurt. Food and rubber melted on the floor. There will be a time to stop eating. A certain taste is to be expected so.
For more like this, go to notellmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
And here we are. Now, I want to say right off the bat that this is one that I personally have not followed. Not one little bit. I know what's going on. I know that there was a case where the girl died or went missing, and for whatever reason, the parents waited a while before they called the police, and so therefore the mom was a prime suspect, and we've had this trial go on, and she was just let loose. But really,
well, hasn't been let loose. Yes. Okay. Let me give you the quick summary. Okay, I'll give you the quick. Let me give you the quick summary. Bottom line is, baby goes missing. Okay. Parents and people start asking the mother where the baby is. She starts making stories about where the baby is. She says the baby is with her nanny. The baby is over here. The baby's over there. So a month elapses without baby. Nobody knows where the hell the baby is. Okay. Finally, after a month, she goes, oh, she's missing. Okay. So the police are called in. Okay. After a month. Okay. You know, search starts for the baby. Things start, you know. They can't find a baby. There's a couple of reports, there was I think it was a gas company worker or electric company, one of the two, utility company worker that says, you know, I think that there's something strange like near this house. The police need to look at it. Three times the police went out there and they didn't do a thorough search. They didn't find anything. Finally, this is June when the baby went missing. Finally, in December, they look again right by the house, right where the utility worker said that that there was something. They find the baby. They find remains. Okay, right. And it's determined that it was the baby. All that was left was a decomposed the skull. You know, the bones and whatever. It was completely, you know, decomposed. They finally, you know, they investigate the mother. They put together a lot of circumstantial evidence, but they can't find, like, for example, they can't determine the cause of death because the baby had been out in the woods for such a long time. There's no way to determine it. They can't find any smoking gun of where the baby died. Okay, they can't. I mean, nobody can determine how the baby was killed, how it got there. They put together a very circumstantial case, okay? They track, like, for example, like the mom's behavior. That after the baby disappeared, basically she went on a wild party binge, okay? She had put herself a tattoo on her body that said La Dolce Vita, okay? They used this as a very, very big thing. It's like, oh, she wanted her beautiful life now that she had this baby to take care of. I guess she was like 22, 23, whatever years old, so she had the baby, she was 20. So they put this entire circumstantial case based on, people like smelling that the trunk of her car smelled very foul, the stories that she had made about where the baby was, the fact that then she said she finally said that the baby died because of an accident, that apparently she drowned in their pool and it was an accident and they panicked, or at least she claims to panicked. Her boyfriend, not husband at the time, whatever, the father of the baby actually contradicts this story. They both don't agree on what the story was about the death. But the bottom line is that nobody can pinpoint exactly what the hell happened. In the end, case goes to trial. All that evidence is presented. you know, they you know, the prosecution shows this girl like as a very, I mean, like she's a bitch, which she well probably looks like she is. But in the end, the jury said, look, do we think this woman is a bitch and maybe killed her son? Yes. However, the problem is that if you look at all this evidence and forget about the personal thing, there is just no evidence of how she, if she did kill him, or if it was like she claims an accident, there's just no, there is no cause of death. There is no this, there is no that, there's no, there's nothing. And basically they said that, you know, they couldn't pronounce her guilty. They did pronounce her guilty of four charges of obstruction of justice. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think that the you know, we were discussing this with a couple of people, you know, because over here, because this happened here in Florida, it was in Central Florida over here. My God, everybody over here was talking about it. For God's sakes, I couldn't have given a shit. But I got to the office. I can't remember, it was Tuesday, I think, that they announced that she was – it was Tuesday, right? It was right after the 4th of July. It was on the 5th. And, you know, the verdict came out. And my God, everybody at the fucking office is talking about this. I couldn't walk like two steps without hearing about this fucking case, okay? Which is why I said I want to talk about it. It's like, you know, we talk about how people don't pay attention to this, don't pay attention to that. I mean, my God, okay? I mean, the country's almost broke. We've got all these problems. But fuck, nobody could stop talking about this goddamn case. Okay, I mean, I called one of my fucking employees at home was on vacation, and the son of a bitch is watching all this coverage nonstop all day, and I'm like, Jesus Christ! I'm like, really? Okay, so I told, you know, I talked to him about what I wanted to find out, and I said, well, go back to fucking watching CNN or whatever the fuck you're watching, for God's sakes. I'm like, you know, so, but, you know, but in the end, bottom line is, look, despite the fact that how everybody said it's like, you know, Alan Dershowitz actually wrote a note about this, okay, where he said, look, guys, here's the problem with it's a problem of evidence, okay? And it's like people don't understand, you know, can't understand why they can't wrap their hands around why they would find O.J. Simpson not guilty of murder, but yet they could find him liable in a civil court in a lawsuit regarding wrongful death. And the reason is because the standard of evidence is different, okay? Because, you know, you may not have the enough evidence to meet the threshold that is for a criminal trial, which is, you know, without reasonable doubt, okay? And but you in a civil trial, it's just preponderance of the evidence. If you think it's over 50%, basically, then you gotta go and like give a civil judgment, okay? So. And I guess that that's what happened in this case. There was just so little direct evidence in the end, even though there was all the circumstantial stuff. And basically the mom, you know, obviously you didn't like this person. Just because you didn't like her didn't mean that you had enough evidence to convict her of murder or send it to the chair. I mean, now some people have argued, and probably correctly, that there's been a lot of people that have been convicted with less evidence.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, and I'm sure there have been, but, you know, but that's why jury trials are so. But maybe they should not have been. Maybe they should not have been. So, I mean, that is how our criminal justice system is really designed to. Honestly, to leave more guilty people free, it's supposed to. I know it doesn't, because I think that one of the things that happens in the U.S. very frequently is that somebody gets accused, and it's like almost like people have all like gotta be guilty, you know. If they got accused, they gotta be guilty, and even though we're supposed to have a system that has a, you know, you're supposed to have presumption of innocence, but if you really follow it as it's written, I mean. You know, there is a very high standard of evidence that's supposed to be met for somebody to be convicted. And I think that a lot of times we probably throw people in jail without that standard being met.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll have two things to add and then we can be done with this. One is you're absolutely right. The standard of evidence really should be high in almost all serious criminal cases. And I think we you know, theoretically, we have this whole innocent until proven guilty, blah, 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 blah. But the proof can be really weak in many cases. And, you know, we have, we have lots of things on eyewitness testimony, which is known to be unreliable. There's lots of cases that are decided on circumstantial evidence, which is by definition unreliable. And, you know, many of these people may be guilty, but a significant fraction probably aren't. And that's, you know, that's disturbing. And you do have, at least in these death penalty cases, these organizations that are going out trying to revisit the evidence in all of the, in a bunch of these cases to try to make sure that we're not putting innocent people to death.
Right.
But, you know, there have been plenty of evidence of cases where after somebody has been put to death, we've been like, oh, oops.
Oh, shit. Right.
You know, and, you know, and not to get into the whole death penalty debate, but that's one of the primary arguments against, is there, you know, a significant number of innocent people get caught up. In many cases, the innocent people aren't exactly good people, but that doesn't mean they might not have done the crime they were convicted for. Anyway,
and I think that's the big point that you just mentioned. Just because you don't like the person, you know, just because they may be a complete asshole,
and maybe they've done other crimes,
and maybe they've done other crimes, it doesn't mean that they did that one.
Right. And I had one other thing to say, but I've forgotten. So, I remember.
Oh, that's great.
I remember. It's the other thing is that what people point out all the time about these kinds of cases is if you look at the numbers, you know, there are many other cases where, you know, baby missing, baby dead, you know, parent, you know, accused, whatever. But, you know, only a very small portion of them blow up into the kind of media circus we had here. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, and it's like, what typically tends to be the difference? Well, if you have, you know, young, white, pretty, you know, girl, whatever, you know, you're going to get a lot more attention. And it's unfortunate. It's one of those things. It's like you said, with the sort of media attention, it's what's going to get people to, like, be riveted and watch the TV, you know? And unfortunately, it's very, very biased. You know, if you were going to give these things equal attention based on, you know, the actual facts of the case, you know, we'd have dozens of these, you know, this kind of stuff, unfortunately, is not actually rare, you know?
No, it's not.
You know, I mean, I'll be careful there. It is not common. It's not like, you know, 10% of everybody is killing their babies, but, you know, it happens on a relatively frequent basis. It's out there. But somehow every once in a while, some of them get blown up into these big, huge media circuses. And I think it's a disservice for people watching both that the other cases get no attention and that these cases that blow up get as much attention as they do.
I mean, we've had a couple of cases that I remember over the last year, for example. I think there was one in New York that obviously did not get as much coverage as this person, about her basically driving her car with her children in it to death.
Yeah.
There was another case, I think it was in New Orleans, that I'm just remembering these off the top of my head, of somebody going and throwing their children off a bridge. Okay, I mean, you know, there have been some really fucked up cases, you know, of people doing some really shitty things with their kids, you know, unfortunately, you know. So.
Indeed. Okay, that's anyway. It for this topic. Let's take a break. We'll be right back, and we'll talk a little bit about Hugo Chavez, or Hugo Chavez. We'll be right back.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then let us begin.
Creepy Classic celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
And here we are. We're back. Hello, hello, hello. So, Hugo, Hugo.
So let me see. I don't know if you're familiar with what happened. Overall. So I'll tell you. You know, just give you the 2 minute summary. Hugo had gone on a multi-country visit. Okay, and one of the stops.
President of Venezuela.
President of Venezuela. He had gone on a multi-country visit. Okay. And he had gone and stopped in Cuba in one of the stops. And the Cuba stop, he wasn't feeling well, okay? So his big buddy, pal, Fidel, told him, well, why don't you get checked out, okay? So they check him out, and, well, first, they don't reveal anything about what's with him. So he spends weeks and weeks in Cuba, with no news about what the hell's going on. Then they release a story saying that he had a pussy abscess around his hip that had to be operated on.
Pussy.
And that's what they And, you know, that they had to remove it. And that's it. And everybody's like, fuck, he's been there for weeks for that? I mean, really? And he couldn't get that treated at home? Okay. A lot of suspicion. Okay. And then it finally comes and then later on he fesses up, well, that wasn't really it. I got cancer. Okay. It was, holy shit. So he's got cancer. But once again, he stayed in Cuba for the treatment. Okay. So, you know, this brings up even a whole bunch of more questions, because over the last number of years, Hugo has been importing, he's been bartering oil for basically doctors from Cuba, okay, to bulk up the public medical system in Venezuela. However, even though he's been doing this, because of so many budgetary screw-ups in Venezuela, the reality is that you go to hospitals in Venezuela, and right now there is just shortages of everything. The medical care is terrible, okay? To the point that the only good medical care in Venezuela is in a private hospital. And because the private hospitals hate him, and because they would have revealed – this is the speculation – they would have revealed what his true condition was, he stayed in Cuba, okay, to get the medical care, okay? He did not go home. He didn't trust the public hospitals. He didn't trust the private hospitals in his own fucking country, so he stayed in Cuba. But then this is what happened. According to the Constitution, there is a certain time period outside of which the president of Venezuela cannot stay out of the country. And if he exceeds it, it has to go – the power has to be devolved to the vice president.
Permanently, okay? Or temporarily?
I think it's almost like kind of semi-permanent, because in order to turn it back – there needs to be another act in order for it to be returned. Okay. So basically he would have fucking screwed himself out of office. So all of a sudden people started clamoring about this and realizing what the fuck had been happening. So all of a sudden, like, after first it seemed they had said that he was going to stay for weeks and weeks in Cuba. Boom. They put him on a plane and fucking flew back to Venezuela. Okay. So he's now back in Venezuela, but the true extent of his medical condition is still not really known. And, a lot of people, let's face it, a lot of people over... Hey, look, Hugo Chavez is not really loved very much by a large... especially almost all the Venezuelans that live outside of Venezuela. And down here, we got a lot of them. I'd say that probably we got...
Isn't his TV show, like, one of the highest rated in, you know...
Well, you know something? Yes, it is. But you do know that it's because if you go, I went there, what was it, about 4 years ago? Well, when you start flipping through the channels, and you know what? When there is not much on except him fucking yakking on TV on 15 different TV channels on TV, well, it's kind of hard, you know, not to have it as the highest rated fucking TV show. Okay.
I think Obama should have a TV
show. Plus, it's like wall to wall. I mean, the beautiful thing about this dude, it's wall to wall. It is 24/7 Hugo Chavez all the time. I mean, it's like, you know, unreal. But anyway, look, his medical condition right now is one that is undetermined. This is a guy who's been a thorn in the side of the U.S. over his entire time there, basically made buddies with Cuba. The Venezuelans right now, almost every true poll shows the majority of Venezuelans are really very disenchanted with the way Venezuela is being run right now. There's hyperinflation in the country. I mean, it's a country that has oil, okay? And oil prices have been surging. But the problem is that Venezuelan revenues of oil have been plummeting because since he fired all the fucking people at PDVSA like 5 years ago that knew how to run the oil company, their oil output has been going down as the price of oil has been going up. So the revenues have not been pouring in as they would have been if he had run the company straight up. So bottom line is that, you know, people don't like him. And, you know, people feel at some point that the only way to get rid of this guy so he doesn't become the next Fidel is like if fucking somebody kills him or he dies. So the thing is that there was a lot of like, I mean, they were like, oh, my God. He could die. Finally, we get rid of him. But, you know, he's back in Venezuela right now. Nobody knows how truly sick he is. So, you know, I mean, it would be – let me tell you something. Right now, because of the situation, the political situation in Venezuela and how, you know, heated it's been, even with their with Venezuela's neighbors, with the U.S. and whatever, and Hugo Chavez's death, I will tell you something. I think that it could fucking almost come down to fucking civil war in Venezuela if this guy dies. That's how much of an iron grip the guy has had on the country right now, okay? I mean, it is not going to be pretty if this guy dies, okay? Like, suddenly, because he's had such an iron grip on the country. So, I don't know, but you know, he's back home. Nobody's – mum's the word. There was a 200 – let me put it this way. He flew back home. There was a anniversary celebration in Venezuela. I can't remember what the heck it was. For something very important, and he didn't make a even though he was back in Venezuela, he did not show up for it. So that just shows you how fragile his health is. Well, okay,
go ahead.
Well, what I'm saying is that this is a guy who never stops talking, who's always been on TV, who's always been anything, and ever since he's been sick, he has made no spoken TV appearances, and he has not appeared in public for any event. Okay, so.
So there you go. I just wanted to point out that this kind of stuff that we're talking about right now with Venezuela is not unknown in our own country. I was actually listening to an interview on the radio within the last week or two about a guy who wrote a book about Grover Cleveland's situation with this. The book's called The President is a Sick Man, authors Matthew Algeo, Algeo. But the situation there was that he also had cancer. It was throat cancer or something along those lines. And apparently it was going on. He discovered this in a time period where there was a lot going on. There was there was a depression in the 1800s that was underway. You know, he felt that it was very important that it not get out that he was sick. So he actually did this whole thing where he organized a secret trip where he went on his yacht or a yacht. I think it was a borrowed yacht or whatever, out in the ocean somewhere, and secretly like got a bunch of doctors on. And they operated him on him, on this boat, not in a hospital. You know, took out the tumor, or whatever. In sort of a doctors afterwards, describing sort of this said, you know, this was First of all, it was the 1800s. Surgery was right. not, like, you know,
advanced.
The safest thing in the world anyway. But doing it on a boat...
is not to do anything.
But doing it on a boat with, you know...
nuts.
You know, the boat's rocking and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so he managed to keep this secret. There was one reporter who got one of the doctors involved to say something. And so he published a story saying, hey, the president wasn't just on vacation. He was having, you know, surgery to take out, like, a cancer. And Grover Cleveland spent, you know, went after this guy and basically ruined this reporter's reputation, denied everything, said this was bullshit, said this was, you know, crazy reporter who didn't know what he talked about. The reporter's career was essentially ended. The real truth didn't come out again, and this reporter wasn't vindicated until, you know, decades later. Anyway, so we've done this sort of thing. There are other examples. There's, I think it was it Woodrow Wilson who had a stroke, and the last 18 months or so of his presidency was basically not capable of doing anything.
Think about Reagan when he got shot.
It was much more serious than we thought it was at the time. Yeah, he was, he wasn't really, he was much closer to death than was publicly revealed, and his capabilities weren't ever back to where they were before that incident, but for a number of months, he basically wasn't capable of doing the job of the presidency.
Yes.
Kennedy had Addison's disease and was on all kinds of drugs for that, painkillers and, you know, narcotic painkillers and such that affect the mind during that time period. And so, you know, FDR certainly, like, outside of his close circle, it was kept very tight to the vest that, you know, he was in a wheelchair. Now, that wasn't an ongoing, like, critical health condition that could have resulted in his immediate death, but he had heart conditions and such towards the end, too. I mean, by the time he was running for his fourth term, he was in pretty bad health. You know, like, the people close to him knew he wasn't going to last another 4 years, most likely. You know, this thing happens everywhere. And, you know, some of these examples you could be like, ah, well, that was 100 years ago, you know, whatever. But, you know, Reagan wasn't 100 years ago. You know,
I think the one thing that was more a little bit about Hugo was the fact that he was refusing to come home to get medical care. I mean, you get the president of any other country that discovers that they have a disease like that, the first thing they're going to do is to fly him home. Okay?
Well, it depends on the country. There are many countries where, yeah, you wouldn't.
Well, I'm talking about any developed country. I'm saying if it was France, if it was the UK, if it was like, the United States, Canada. I mean, the first thing they're going to do is, like, if they discover, you know, they're on a trip and the president falls ill, is a fucking obviously, unless he needs emergency medical treatment, okay, they're going to fucking try to get him home, okay? But in this case, I mean, he did not want to go back home, okay? And I think that's the one thing that it's just, you know, to a lot of people was just like, well, that just shows you how he feels that he is in such – he knows he is so hated by so many people and is so distrustful of everything that he would rather get medical care in Cuba, okay, and feel safer there than going back to Venezuela.
Well, there you go. And I'll just throw out one other similar example that comes to mind. The president of Yemen right now. You know, after they tried to blow him up,
Saudi Arabia.
He's about to come back apparently, and he's been slowly over the last month revealing how serious his injuries really were, and he's been through like 8 surgeries now or something like that was recently revealed. At first, it was like, no, nothing wrong, he's fine, it's just a flesh wound.
Oh yeah, it's just a he's just resting. He's just resting. He just needs a little time off. That's all. Yeah.
Anyway.
You know, nothing happened. Anyway,
that's
all right.
It. So, hey, I think we're actually getting done in less than an hour. Yay! Okay.
Yay!
We've been running long for the last few weeks. Sorry, guys. Anyway, that's it for Curmudgeon's Corner. Thanks for listening. As usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com. That's A-B-U-L-S-M-E. You know, give us any questions, comments, thoughts, suggestions for future topics, whatever. And we're glad to have them. In the meantime, tell your friends to listen and come back next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.